Now entering Nerdist.com. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Laurie Kilmartin. I'm Jackie Cation.
I'm Laurie Kilmartin.
Are you tired?
I am tired.
So am I. I'm punchy as all hell.
Tell me why you're tired and I'll tell you why I'm tired.
Okay. Well, since we've been on the air, I have performed
Holy
at my
shit,
high school.
This is a long story. Okay,
yeah.
Go.
And yeah, settle in. Open up a water. Chill yourself out. Here we are in the Nerdist studios above the loudest, happiest Dan Harmon fans you've ever met in your whole wide life.
Hooray.
Hooray. Anyway, so but today what happened was I drove from the Nevada City, California Film Festival where I was doing stand-up comedy.
That's
with,
cool.
With Bamford and then Andy Kindler and
that
Ian
Abramson.
That
sounds like a great gig.
It was...
Where's Nevada City near? Is it near Tahoe?
It's not near anything. It's near itself. It's in the REI Mountains. No, they should be called the REI Mountains. They're actually the Sierra Madres. But I want the National Park
System.
You
didn't hike there?
No, this doesn't hike. But I'll say this, is that... So I drove there because I was like, you flew into... They were like, we'll fly you to Sacramento and then you'll have to rent a car and drive another hour up towards Yuba City and Reno.
Yeah, that's kind of near Tahoe.
Right. So what I did was... I was like, well, I'll just drive there.
The whole way?
Yeah, the whole way, and then I'll just drive back, and then I'll have my car. And I regret that.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it was dumb. It was Andy and Ian Abramson got picked up from the airport. I'm sure Kate Berlant and John Early got picked up because they were also there. But it was an adorable little
listing
brigadoon.
More people I'm jealous of right now that had this gig.
I was jealous of them because they were, I think, I think they were advertised greater than I was. I don't. I could be jealous if you wanted me to.
Yeah.
You want me to find some bitterness and bring it out?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what the fuck this podcast is about. What are you, have you been
when
sitting on
have
shit?
You just been, have you been sitting on bitterness? Jesus, Jackie.
Oh, my God.
Rise to the occasion.
Well, okay. Taping this Sunday night.
Sunday night after a big day.
And I was curled up around my son and like spooning like a mother should.
Right.
And he's loving it and I'm loving it and he's telling me about his hopes and dreams. And then I say, oh, I got to go tape a podcast. Let me go get your grandmother in here. And so crickety, you know, shuffle, shuffle down the wood floors comes the 70-year-old slippers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I left the two of them.
Right. Spoon or be spooned? Were they just yelling spoon or be spooned at
no,
each other?
No, like, you know, who cares? She didn't like the pajamas he was wearing. That was the argument I left on.
Oh, I'm interesting. Like, interesting life choice. Because, you know, here's my thing about pajamas.
Right.
Nobody sees them. Nobody sees them. So sad, too bad. Here's what, here was my beautiful, you were beautifully having a beautiful moment with your son and you had to leave.
Right.
I was having a beautiful moment with my fella, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
He bought at the dollar store a dozen plastic Easter eggs because it's Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
And he hid them all over the house.
Aww.
And in every single plastic, and I've found seven of them so far.
That's cute.
And in every Easter egg is a heart. He has drawn a little piece of paper with a heart. Not that it's a competition, but somebody is clearly fucking winning. Because it isn't me. I did nothing for Easter for him.
Here's the... I console myself that most comedians are miserable and you're an anomaly. Because if most comedians were happy like you, I would kill myself.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully they are
not. The only reason I can hear that is because I know,
you know
you're
that
the only one.
Right, that Jim Norton is somewhere weeping softly into a cracked mirror while he tries to blow himself. Yes.
That's him being happy, though.
That would actually be one of the happiest days of his life. And he's doing what he can. You were in New York again.
I was.
You're always in New York.
Delightful.
I'm so
again,
jealous of
delightful.
That.
Delightful. Yeah, that is pretty sweet. You know what? I got to admit, that's pretty fucking cool.
It is really cool that you can just go and do sets.
Once a month and stuff. Yeah, it's good.
That's neat.
And I'm very grateful and happy that I have that little opportunity.
It's so cool.
But I'm sitting in this, you know, like, I'm I went to a party yesterday.
Hollywood party? Hollywood party?
Kind of, yes.
Oh, cool.
All right. So, but I can't say anything else. But
no, that's fine. Hollywood party.
Lots of...
Think about Coke and Bowl of Keys. Do it. It's the 70s.
Yeah. Jackie, you got to update your references.
Guess what's the last time I went to a Hollywood party, you guys?
A Bowl of Keys. That's like Fast Times, right? Yeah. Okay.
I think it's more Love Boat. I don't think it's...
What happened to Julie? And normally I have anxiety about these things because it's lots of couples, you know, people paired off, and
you're like, ugh.
Yeah, like I didn't go to our office or show Christmas party last year because I was like, I can't take this shit
anymore. Can't face it.
It's worse.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But somehow yesterday I was there and everyone was paired off, almost everyone, and I was like, I'm okay. You know, I'm just different.
Yeah.
But. 2 weeks when I was in New York, last time I was in New York, I'm sitting in this coffee house, Manhattanville Coffee. It's on, it's the beginning of the gentrification of Harlem, are these little tiny coffee houses
that
are popping up.
Thank God it's begun. Thank God. Where will else with man buns?
Yeah.
Where will they go?
Yes, man buns are coming. And so it's like on 141st and Edgecombe. And,
okay.
It's
a really nice coffee shop.
Twee, and it's everything. Okay.
Is it everything?
Columbia students, and you know.
Okay.
You know, it's that whole thing, and I was by myself again, I don't know. I just sat there for a couple hours. Morning pages, Artist Way pages are supposed to take 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But when I don't have anything else to do, they take like 2 to 3 hours, and I just write 3 pages. But the whole I write a sentence and I daydream for 40 minutes. It fucking takes forever, but I love it.
Oh,
like,
do you?
It's just letting my brain go wander and waste and not having to take care of anybody and pick shit up at the grocery store and
right.
You know.
It's hours of just
really
you
heaven.
Getting to just melt, just
yes,
just wallow in and mellowness. Yeah.
I've been alone, you know. I mean, my whole life, just huge patches of aloneness, but I've not been good
Sounds
with
like
it.
Comedy, yep.
And it always makes me unhappy, and then I start masking it by eating or whatever. And
yeah.
I was just noticing, like, I don't mind now. I'm like, and is that bad? Am I dooming myself to be alone?
Is that too much? Is that the horrible Harlequin romance? It means that now you don't care. He's going to show up.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fuck you. Because, you know, like, because people would always say that.
That's
don't
how
worry.
I will greet my soulmate is, fuck you.
Fuck you. What happened? It's a TikTok, buddy.
Yeah.
And But people would always say that about boyfriends or men or right. partners or whatever. It's like when you'd least expect it. And that is not how I found the online dating situation that – because guess what? I expected it every time. Every time I would go to a Starbucks and stare at another Latin professor from CSUN or who's some dude who lived down in the OC who had driven up for no reason.
Oh, God, no.
Because of my headshot. The only thing I had that was digital was my headshot. So on my internet dating thing, which was 12 years ago now, I had to write underneath the only digital picture I had of me, which was my headshot.
Yeah.
Professionals were involved. I look something like this. So, because I can't.
Here's the thing. Like, I'll tell somebody that this happened a couple times now. My name's Lori. I'll say that while we're messaging. And I'm a comedian. And there aren't a lot of comedians named Lori. And so you can kind of. Figure it out pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, and then there's a picture of me in my user profile.
Right.
So you can go, oh, that's her. So I've been Googled a lot before a date.
Yeah.
To where several times guys
They're
have
watching
like,
sets
known
and
listening to podcasts.
So great.
I'm like, you know too much already.
Right.
You
shouldn't do that. That's
I don't know. Do I have
had
to
the
just,
same problem.
Just use the initial L. And instead of Laura, I don't know what to do. That's
I don't know how you can fix that.
But Maria solved that problem, right?
She just stuck it out, you know?
Yeah.
My favorite story was when she was in the Huskow. She was in the psych ward, and the psychiatrist Googled her. And was watching her set
unbelievable.
While she was in a session.
Right, right.
And she was like, no, not cool. It's, that's a complete. Here's what I did. I went and performed at my high school.
Right.
And did an assembly, high school assembly.
For high school students?
For high school students on the Friday morning.
And you were introduced. And then I had lunch with the mayor. As a graduate?
A graduate, yeah. And they kept saying over and over again, high school graduate, 1983. And I was like, why out loud? Why over and over again? And then the next night was the show.
Yeah.
And the show was in the same place, the South Milwaukee Performing Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, my brother and my dad, the church they go to, they announced it. So everyone from church came.
God.
All of my cousins came. Everyone I went to high school with came.
That is awful.
Uh-huh. And then, remember there was a juggler?
Yes.
And so it was me, juggler, Mary Mack, Tom Clark, and then me again. And the next day I'm talking to my Uncle John, who's 91.
This gig just happened?
It just happened.
Okay. This sounds like another gig you had.
No, it was the one I was telling you that it was going to happen.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
The last episode, I was like, we can't put the juggler in charge, so
that's
I have to host.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I hosted, and the next day, of course, my Uncle John was like, I like the juggler the best.
Oh, God.
And I was like, thank you, Uncle John, and I'm going to steal your hearing aid.
That's,
I don't know.
You can tell he's blood when he says something like that.
Oh, yeah. They're all hilarious. So my dad and my brother were like, we're not going to come. Is that a problem? And I said, it's not my Little League game. Who gives a shit? There's going to be 500 people there. It's going to be fine. But my favorite thing that happened, and I am not the hero of this story, Laurie Kilmartin, is that I tweeted that a couple of guys who had beat me up in junior high were coming to the show. They had each messaged me separately on Facebook. And they said, hey, remember? And I was like, yeah, I remember Jimmy. I remember. And anyway, so you're coming
to
the show.
You were beaten by boys in junior high school?
I was a little bit of a tomboy. And so I would mouth off to boys. And so one time, a bunch of boys pushed me into the creek in the middle of winter. And it had frozen over. And so,
as cricks will do,
it was nothing but a crick. Anyway, it was creek. And so I was soaking wet. And what's his face? It was 40 years later. I don't have to say his name, but
fucking say his name. Say it,
Brian Anderson. What the fuck is that attitude?
How many there's like 50 Brian Andersons that listen just to our podcast.
So Brian Anderson punched me in the face and split my lip, and I fell into the
crick.
Well, they were bad, and so I went home, and my stepmother said to me, "I hope they look worse." Anyway, so because Nancy Kashian, nothing but supportive,
a lot of nurturing.
So I said that Brian Anderson was going to come to the show, and this other guy, and I get a tweet back from Marianne Schwartz, and she said, funny you would mention bullying. I was so mean to Marianne Schwartz in fifth grade. I was the worst.
Shit.
Oh, shit is right. And I was
you were that girl.
Oh, I right back at her. Right. And the thing is Marianne Schwartz was you know, she wasn't particularly nice. And this other woman was, these girls weren't particularly nice to me, but I was also super not nice to them.
Wow.
So I was like, delete. And then they all came. Marianne Schwartz is married to a guy who works for the FBI.
Oh my God.
Katie Bachman was there with her husband, who's a Milwaukee Police Department guy and a Milwaukee cop. And then Holly Abonick was there, I think, with her fellow, I don't know, whatever, a bunch
so
of people.
So is it water under the bridge?
Yeah, because it's got to be 30 years now, right? So everybody, so it just made me laugh that they were all there.
I don't know that I would be able to forgive Jackie Snyder for ostracizing me in fourth grade.
Well, you'd have to look her face to face.
Yeah.
And go, oh, I can't fucking care anymore. That's what you'd have to do.
Right.
Which is what Marianne Schwartz did with me. And she was like, it's good to see you again. And then we all went for a beer over at downtown Milwaukee, South Milwaukee, Moran's.
Sounds like it was a very healing show.
Oh, so beautiful. So
it brought
healing.
A lot of closure.
A lot of closure.
To relationships you'd forgotten about.
That's exactly what it did. I'm so sorry to laugh.
Listen, there are so many young comics in New York City.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
You got to. Is everyone doing stand up now?
Yeah, and they're funny.
Of course they are. And
you
good
know,
looking.
And they're.
And fit?
They're not all good looking. But they're.
Made Kyle laugh.
Don't worry. There's some normal people we can identify.
Okay.
With. But and reflecting what's happening in their generation. It's fascinating. It's just like, you know, you're just reminded like, oh, I was that person. And
right.
I was talking about my shit. I was talking about AOL and the old fucking comics were like, what's that? And they faxed their avails. And you know, like, you know. It's,
the faxing of avails.
Life goes on. And now we're those old people. And, you know.
And we're looking at them.
I think they're actually much nicer to us than I am. Well, like generationally? I was to the old ones, yeah. Because I remember just going, get off stage. It's my turn.
Oh,
you know,
really?
Like I was, yeah.
You were like, yeah, I need, yeah. I felt like that with every comic. I am not necessarily just like that with new comics. I'm constantly pacing going, yeah, you're great. In other news, give them the light.
I never stopped feeling like it's my turn. That's true. But I definitely felt like, you know, when you start and you're like, oh, you dinosaur, you're talking about stuff and young people don't know what you're saying, you know.
Right.
Get me up in front of this audience because they're mine. And now, you know.
And now the thing is I'm telling you something. I can massage an audience from Jafar, man. It's...
Well, you know, I think we got forced to follow the audience a little bit too, and I think like those older headliners, like the old improv headliners, kind of, they were this age, like early baby boomer. They were taught their whole audience was white early baby boomer, pretty much. It was like an echo chamber, and so they all just sort of aged together, and then all of a sudden. They were gone, and we sort of our audience kind of changed a little bit, you know, like then comedy collapsed and then it was alt stuff and then you sort of had to follow these new rooms and it kind of forced you to be a little more flexible in what
you were writing about and for sure, I think. Because I think you're right about that, that late 60s, early 70s, there was, you know, the Chitlin Circuit, and then there was the white comedy clubs.
Right. I'm talking about the guys that were headlining, mostly men that were headlining, but there's some women when we started. So like late 80s, early 90s.
Did you know Lou Deck? Do you ever know Lou Deck?
Uh-uh.
Oh, a Florida guy.
Okay.
And
this guy's never left Florida. There's some.
Oh, he was a Comedy Store guy. I think he went back to Florida eventually.
Okay. I didn't know him.
Yeah, but what I mean, like, I'm trying to think of like the people that are older than us. I mean, there's Shandling, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like all those. Did Gary? Now, someone told me a story that Gary Shandling didn't do stand up before he wrote for Letterman. He wrote for Letterman and then started doing stand up. Have you heard that?
I've never heard that. I've been listening to a lot of Shandling stuff lately, you know.
Yeah, because he passed.
Yes.
So it's a. I loved what the improv put.
What'd they put?
They put just a quote about nice people. Nice finish first or something.
You don't know where the finish line is. Yeah,
you don't know.
Where nice guys finish last.
Right.
Yeah.
The Laugh Factory, as always, when anyone dies.
Oh my God.
It makes me want to cut myself. They always say, he's making God laugh.
Oh.
And I'm like,
he definitely wasn't a Christian or Jewish. I mean, he didn't believe that traditional stuff anyway.
I don't even think he was a Laugh Factory comic. That's the other thing, is that he better go to your comedy club.
If you're going to exploit it on your marquee.
Yes.
Yeah. That person.
Flappers can put my... If I die, flappers can put my name on their marquee.
Oh, forever.
How about
that? They could have the Jackie Cation chair where people would sit and talk about you.
Right. There would be like a
memorial. Oh, my God. Me in the Yoo-Hoo room. I don't care.
It could be anywhere. We're doing that show. Is that this week or is it next week?
We're doing. Oh, I want to talk about that too because
show's crazy.
We're you and I are doing a show. Laura House has
it's Laura House's show.
Yeah, and Laura's great. So she put you, me, Maria Bamford, and Karen Kilgariff on the same show in the Yoo-Hoo room. It seats 40 60, people.
Max.
Yeah,
60 people.
But here's what I loved because I noticed because I had this opportunity. Okay, so I see Laura's flyer.
Yep.
Aside from your name being misspelled, let's forget that happened.
It burns. It burns.
But she just had our last names, and it was just like, that's enough, because this is a motherfucker of a show with Kilmartin, Kilgariff, Bamford, and Cation, and House. You have a show. It wasn't five ladies doing comedy. It was no mention of gender,
and not even our first names.
Yeah, we were treated like guys. It was exciting.
It was just comics.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, this is going to be the craziest fucking show in the world.
Yes. Okay. So then, so I'm on a show tomorrow night that's a women's show, and it's being marketed like that heavily.
Okay.
And it's cool.
I love a freak show as much as the next person. You know why? Because I need stage time.
But I like the comics that are on it. So it's fine.
Okay.
You know, whatever. It's fine. And if it gets people in, I get it. You know, I loved how the Punchline did all women headliners in March. In one sense, I get it. But I wish it still feels like ladies' night. You know,
contrived.
Okay. Saturday, I'm at Hermosa. There's 10 comics doing 10 minutes or 10 doing 8 minutes. Five of us are female. It's mm-hmm. me, Kira Sultanovich, Jackie Fabulous, Christella,
yeah,
and Monique Marvez.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a super powerhouse lineup as well.
It wasn't like build like anything. We just all kind of showed up. And then, you know, people started talking about it. I'm like, all right, here come the top four predictable jokes. Okay. But then, you know, it was just kind of cool to be like, yeah
there's just doing stand up
parody. It feels good to not be the only one or, you know, I mean, it felt good to be way. Not special, not the female.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the whole thing is the freak show vote, those freak shows, I call them that because that's what it is, right? You're booking something very specific. It's going to be all ladies. It's chick shtick or whatever you want to call it. And that's what you're hoping to use. And so whenever anyone gets mad at me for calling it a freak show, I'm like, aren't you booking it as a freak show? And they are.
The attraction is that the comics are female or that they're Hispanic or that they're black.
It's not
that
they're
funny and they're this. Yeah.
And so I mean, it'd be great. And Laura House, my favorite thing Laura House said about this show, she said, should I book a couple of people who could bring audience members? And I said, just tell them Maria will be there and Maria will fill the room and the rest of us will just show
as
up
long
and
as
it'll
you
be fine.
Put Bamford up there in a good font so people can read it. I think
everyone can read it. It's going to be fine. You'll fill the room. There's 60 seats. It'll be $5 a pop. Barbara Holiday will be very pleased. It'll all work out. So everyone get the meatloaf. It's lovely. Anyway,
there's this, so Jill Soloway wrote that. Jill Soloway's a creator and director and producer of Transparent.
Okay.
Know?
Oh, right.
And so she wrote
Translucent. Isn't your mom watching
my
Translucent?
My mom's watching Translucent. Yeah.
Other people have watched Transparent, but not Mrs. Kilmartin.
She wrote this really cool piece in Medium about, you know, how she was when she was very young, she dodged a Bill Cosby situation.
Oh,
he actually
wow.
offered her and a friend a ride home, and they for some reason they decided to take a taxi. Maybe there's some
sixth sense about something. Hey, I don't want any part of this dude.
The gift of fear, that Gavin De Becker thing. And then but then she was talking about she did an interview with this Canadian DJ who's like accused of rape and I don't know. It was I don't have any commentary besides it was a really good article. And it is very, she starts talking. It's definitely like feminist studies sort of language, which part of me is like, but I think that's from me being raised when I was raised. And that's another thing I kind of wanted to tie this to is like one day this week I did a show. We'll talk about this too with Bobcat and Caitlin McGill. They have a show, right?
Yeah,
so
I
that
did
was
that.
Great. We'll talk about that great show on a second thing. But one of the comics was there, Claire O'Kane, who's a San Francisco comic.
Okay.
And she's just talking about female stuff. And it was very like, you know, like, yeah, you should be talking about it. That's you and that's your life. And the same feeling I had when Carmen Esposito she has that chunk on her period.
Yeah.
Where I just think, God, the way I was raised as a comic.
Right. I always cringe at it, but I think it's gutsy stuff.
Yeah. And
but it probably isn't.
But I wonder how many times I have said I had an idea for a joke and my subconscious is like, no, you're not allowed to talk about that because men don't want to hear about that. And it seems like the next generation of female comics do not have that thing ingrained in their head.
They have no fucks to give. No fucks to give.
They're
they will
free.
Talk about
they're free.
Free. And we built that road, Lori Kilmartin. No, but last night in Nevada City.
We built some part of a road, but our road is still full of all those rules.
Right, we also rebuilt the wall. Anyway, very sad. But because I can't seem to get to the road. I keep blocking. But last night I tried to do this new bit about perimenopause.
Yeah.
And and it worked. It worked. Granted, I was in the oldest, whitest town in Los Angeles, in California, Nevada City, which is, I think, where Mill Valley people go to holiday. It's like, if there's not enough white people in Mill Valley, let's go to Nevada City and bring our dogs and have somebody look at a crystal. Two stores. two bead stores. What kind of town can support
I love
two
bead stores.
Do you love a bead
stores
store?
Like that. Old Sac used to be like that. Old Sacramento. They used to had a club
the grossest
called
name of any part of town ever. I will always
our,
say that.
Our state's capital, Jackie.
Right.
Oh, they have tons of bead stores and chakras
kites,
and all that
sure,
shit. Fucking love that useless stuff.
Okay, so
but you're talking about perimenopause,
right? And
which
I've got
the least sexy word
ever, and yes. I don't ever say perimenopause because it's the least sexy and it's not funny. So I just call it middle-aged lady time.
I like
because
that so much
I can't.
Better.
It's just more approachable.
I also think that's cool. Like you still want to entertain, right?
And entirely.
Yeah, you don't.
If there's something.
You don't want
to allow me to refer to myself in the third person, but if there's something I want to do, I need to entertain.
I think you don't want to be, or maybe you don't want to be clinical for clinical's sake, just to shove a term down someone's throat. You do want to be, you want to get laughs.
I want to get laughs, but I don't want to make anybody, I don't want to freak anybody out.
Yeah, right.
But now you're talking about this next generation. There was, you know that roast battle at the comedy store that they have? So I'm sitting around with another comic who goes to a lot of open mics, and he goes to that roast battle.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about Heather Maruli. Have you ever met her?
No, I don't think
she's one of the new young comics coming up, and she's in the roast battle.
Okay.
And she's in the battle with this guy whose name I never got.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
It's probably Josh. Come on.
Sure. A guy named Larry. And but they're roast battling each other, and one of his first cracks is about her body and about her weight, and he just slams her because it's a roast.
Right.
And she is like, well, you liked it enough to fuck it. Right back at him at this roast battle, because I guess they had hooked up one night. And then they're going.
That's great.
And so they're going back and forth, and she's just massacring this guy. And at one point, I guess she said, you think you're such a great comic, but the tightest five was in me. Boom! I was like, holy shit, somebody sold that on a pillow.
That's awesome.
It was such a great line. And I was like, I don't know that I would have had the guts to ever say such a thing. Right?
Oh my God. I'm going through the Rolodex of comics I've slept with. No. I could never be in a roast battle with any of them.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That would be a lot.
That's cool.
And so he tells me that story, this guy I'm hanging out with, open mic guy.
Yeah.
And the other story he tells me, because I think I define sexism differently than the new young comics, you know? So I guess this woman got really drunk. At an open mic over at the Liquid Zoo.
A comic. Okay.
Yeah, one of the young comics. And then one of the other comics, a guy, offered her a ride home. And so the next day, my buddy talks to her, and she said, and she's in her early 20s or something, right? And so she said, well, he got really gross. And I was like, how gross? Was it horrible? What horrible thing happened? Well, I guess he drove her home, and then he wanted to come in. And have sex. And I guess he was super subtle about it. And he said, I'd like to come in and have sex. And she said no. And he asked again. And then she said no. And then he left. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound like sex. That sounds like just people trying to get laid.
That's
just a guy asking twice. I don't think that's horrible. Is that horrible?
The way you described it isn't, but that might not be accurate.
Well, and then it does get horrible, but only because we're in the 21st century, because I guess a half an hour later he FaceTimed her and he was jerking off.
Ew.
That's where it all falls apart. But that initial thing, right? Because she said that was all that happened.
Yeah.
And then he left. I mean, how many times?
I don't know. It depends. I think it depends on how the guy's making you feel, the tone of voice, if you feel threatened, you know,
versus
somebody who's just, you know, someone who's drunk and dumb, like, you know, it's.
No, she was drunk and dumb.
When you were talking about the guy whose name we're not going to use, who asked you multiple times when you guys were in a condo and
on
you
New Year's Eve.
Cheerfully said no. And he's like, all right. Like he was just giving it a good shot.
Right. And then he did it three times all week.
Right.
Like he's like, and then New Year's Eve, he was like, come on, let's just, and I'm like, no, go to your own room, weirdo. And then he went to his own room.
Right. And so that the way you present that, it sort of seems adorable in a way.
Right. And in the moment I was uncomfortable.
And plus I know who you're talking about. And I'm like, oh, that guy's harmless.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is what that feels like, it doesn't feel like sexual abuse. It feels like a guy trying to get laid.
Right.
And me having to just say multiple times, well, it's not going to happen. I understand you're running it up the flight.
So you're saying. I know what you're saying.
But I don't.
Do you think, though, we were raised to our expectations are so low that to us, it's, if we escape without being raped, we're like, oh, well, it doesn't, it's not that bad. You know,
that's what I'm asking you. That's what it feels like a little bit. If we escape without being actually forced into making out with, or some dude groping, or some horrible, like another level, or the actual rape or the actual physical assault.
Were we to be able to live like a week without all, and this is like such a term. This is a term of this age, microaggressions. But were we able to live a week without that, you know, and notice? Because we've just been worn down, you know. So there's so much shit you and I don't notice that happens constantly.
Right, right. And the sexism, some of it that I think younger women get, it doesn't bounce off of them or wash over them.
Right.
Or it bounces off of us, and it washes over.
Yeah, and maybe I don't know which way is right. Like I don't know. Like, should I have been
standing mad
earlier? You know what I mean? Like, would that have counted? Or
I wanted to count. No, I don't know.
But each generation has their breaking point, right? And so our generation, we marched female comics up to a certain line, right?
Yeah.
And then they come in and go, you guys. You know, you're putting up with some real bullshit.
Right. And then they move the
line. And then they move it forward. And we're like, well, I didn't even think you could go
like
that far.
Like the suffragettes, you guys.
Exactly. So
it's like the women who came before us. They pushed the line.
It's female history.
Sort of the history of all sort of human advancement.
Yeah. But when you see, you know, when all of a sudden, like, you're the second wave now, like, you're not the young wave anymore. And you're like.
And so when I hear what happens, there is part of me that goes, and I don't like this feeling, but there's part of me that's like, oh, come on, walk it off. It's not that big of a deal.
Same here.
Which doesn't
feel fair.
That's got to
be our age.
Yeah, that's got to be a generational thing because I don't want to be a jackass.
Yeah.
Because I also want to be supported.
Totally.
And go, oh, yeah, guys, I mean, he can keep it together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and talk
but,
to
you know, and then
like a gentleman.
You go back another generation. Chrissy Hynde, right,
was
raped and was like, well, you know.
I was kind of asking for it.
Yeah, it's like. No, you and I are appalled.
Yeah.
But her and her generation, maybe that's the best.
Yeah, she's 15 years older than we are.
Yeah.
Isn't she 15, 20?
Something like that.
I'm
just saying for.
Yeah.
You couldn't say she isn't a feminist in a way, in the way that she's lived, you know? But
yeah.
Your brain.
It does feel generational.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Fuck.
Do you want to plug the lady of the week?
Sure. Why didn't you?
Oh, I did. That's right. Because I just worked with her, Mary Mack.
Super funny.
Who grew up 40 miles from Maria Bamford in northern Wisconsin. And one of my favorite things she always says on stage in the long set is, I grew up in the woods. I forgot to tell you. Anyway, so... Yeah, but she is very. She's a
but
tiny
I think
woman.
We should all from now on when we talk about a female comic, how many miles away from Maria Bamford she grew
okay,
up?
That fair
we need
enough.
To include
Excellent.
That information.
So next week's interesting. We'll do it in kilometers. And but Mick is she's such a great comic, and she does so much. It's like. She also plays the mandolin sometimes because she's a master's degree in music.
Wow.
And so she does this kind of quirky family kind of stand up. And then she will also just play these weird songs occasionally.
Yeah.
And, but she's so gifted, so talented.
Yeah.
She was on Last Comic Standing.
Yeah,
she's super funny, super smart. Mary Mack, you guys, Mary Mack Comedy on Twitter.
M-A-C-K.
Yeah. M-A-C-K. Yeah.
That reminds me, like, I read another study about, how when women use vocal tricks like the or when their
you
voices go up at the end.
Oh, yeah, because that's what you want out of a doctor is when someone says, so do you want to get the surgery?
But that's what you're going to get as a doctor. And that doctor will still be really good at her job. That's just the way she talks. Like, and there's guys that talk like that, too. There's guy comics I've seen do that same sort of...
I've
read
voice
it also called NPR voice, where it's that sort of awkward... awkward spacing in between words, like Ira Glass kind of embodies it, you know?
Oh, right.
But it's kind of that and kind of that thing where you go up at the end like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I've noticed that before.
Women are punished more than men when they do that kind of vocalization.
Okay.
And I see that in stand-up, too. I see... It's weird. Like, I was wondering... I was thinking, like, do you have to... Like, I've always felt like... for a road room, part of how you control the crowd is vocally.
Yep.
And they need to be afraid of you, that afraid that the consequence of them talking to you. And part of how you control them is through your voice.
Okay.
And so if there's a... Now, there's also someone might have a style or a timing where their voice is going to go up a little bit. And is that person losing control of the audience, or... is, you know, somebody like Maria is a master so that she can have like a very soft voice but be in complete control of an audience.
Right.
I don't necessarily have a huge theory here. I'm just throwing this out there. Yeah, because you and I both have low voices.
We have pretty low voices and very strong personalities on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I think comes from doing just stage those time. Weird one-nighters.
Yeah.
And I think some of that stuff. And some of the new Alti comics are used to the polite attentiveness of theaters and stuff like that.
Which is still startling to me when a crowd is polite and attentive.
Right.
I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Right. Are you guys cool? It's it's the other night, I guess, there was in Nevada City, the people of Nevada City all know each other. There's 11 people and their various pets.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will talk to each other during the show. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like talking about what they're hearing or other things like that. And it's completely absurd.
Yeah.
And I guess it happened during Andy Kindler's set on Friday night. And so he had to shut him down a little bit and deal with it. And Maria was nervous that that's what was going to happen on Saturday night.
Yeah.
So, but they were an entirely different audience for Maria.
Yeah.
You know, where they knew what they were seeing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think, because when Maria... What I've noticed when Maria gets when the audience starts to get chatty, Maria gets softer. She'll start whispering her jokes.
That's what Bette Davis, I think, said to do with children when they're being really loud, is to start whispering, because then they
have to lean in.
Yeah.
And then they have to shut up and try to hear what you're trying to say to them.
I've never found that worked for me.
No, it's not anything I want to do. Anyway.
I get louder and I'm like, what the fuck?
Right.
I get very confrontational.
And, yeah,
and
a little
do
bit.
Macro aggressions
oh my
to
God,
the audience.
Which we should talk about. Margaret Cho last night. Night oh,
right.
Before,
so
was
you just tell
stress?
Me about this. But
okay.
I'm like, don't tell me on the podcast because I don't know yet.
Yeah, yeah. So TMZ broke it. And then I saw.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then I saw something she posted on Facebook, Margaret Cho, about how in the middle of her set, the club, the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey, which I've never played.
I've worked it once.
You've worked it once?
Yeah.
They turned her mic off and they flipped on the lights.
Wow.
Because I guess some woman got up and was sort of charging the stage and stuff, and cops might have been called and all this. Yeah, weird kind of stuff where the weirdest thing is I don't understand why they would have cut the mic. You could turn on the lights if there's some sort of disturbance, but you got to let the comic talk.
Sounds like a panic in the back of the room. It sounds like a panic at the board. Right?
Yeah,
Like, you know.
So
if
cut,
you got
but cut the mic is
the
so
stage.
Weird. Yeah, it's. I guess she was doing. She was pressing. She was doing. She was
she
being
does.
Margaret Cho.
You don't go to Margaret Cho and
and you're not seeing Fluffy.
Yeah,
I don't know
what
you think is happening.
Yeah,
if you're gonna go to a Margaret Cho show, it's gonna be about rape. It's going to be about feminism. It's going to be about being Asian. It's going to be about being white. It's going to be
just what you want to hear in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Right. Well, it turns out, I guess there was some shouting.
Wow.
About hey, we don't want to hear this, and you're like, well, and I think Margaret at one point said my favorite line, which was, "None of you are getting a dime back."
Oh,
something
sweet.
Like that, which made me laugh.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody gets their
That's
money
why
back.
She's a headliner, motherfuckers.
Exactly. Follow that, bastards. And have they ever had to turn off the lights or turn off the mic?
No.
Because of unruliness?
No. I've never had that much of an unruly situation. And I've never actually had a club care that much what was happening to me.
They're like, oh, we're all going to be in the office.
Yeah, I've had
just,
people
do your time, we'll
stepping
leave.
On the stage and just, I'm like, all
You've
right.
You've had people get on stage with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hecklers.
Yes.
Or audience
just like
members
drunk,
who wanted to.
It wasn't like they were attacking me, but they were drunk and wanted to try to get up on stage. And
okay, kind of, please tell that story. Where did that happen?
I don't even remember a specific time.
Right.
It's happened several
so,
times.
So many times.
Where I've just sort of talked them back off stage.
Nice.
Yeah. No, they
did
always
you mock
leave me
them
alone.
Off stage,
I feel like the club goes, oh, okay, I'll come back in an hour. Like, the club owner just leaves for an hour on right. when I'm on stage.
Do your time. Yeah. And we're going on vacation.
Yeah. And
I'm playing Kirkland this week, and Angela and Dennis usually go on vacation the week I come. They're like, we know that you're the golden retriever of comedy. It's going to be fine. It's all going to work out. But one time somebody did charge the stage when I did this old club long, long time ago. And for some reason, my sister was in the front row.
Yeah.
And she tripped the woman.
Oh, my God.
Which I thought, well, that's a little overkill. I could have probably dealt with that.
Nah.
And the only other time was back when I first started. I had the weirdest gig at this club in Madison. After the club I worked at burned down, there was a new club.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy let me do 2 minutes before the MC. It was dumb. It was, I had to stop doing it because I didn't really ever get to. But anyway, so I was trying to bring
you didn't
up,
grow from that experience comedically?
No, I didn't. I didn't grow.
It's
I was
too bad.
So irritato. Magnus irritato. And so, but this one guy was super drunk and he came toward me. And you know how the stage is not tall sometimes.
Yeah.
You're just like a foot and a half taller than the audience. So this guy was about 6'5".
Yeah.
So we were eye to eye. And I was like, sir, the show's about to start. You should probably sit down. And he goes, and I said, sir, you're pretty drunk. You might want to just have a seat or maybe not watch the show. And he's like, drunk. And I said, then what's that look on your face? Down syndrome? And at that point, then they did cut the mic.
He was smart enough to get that joke, which means
the audience got that joke. He did not get that joke. But the club owner came and got me off the stage.
Oh, shit. I had, okay, so I just
might have been the last 2 minute bit that I did before that.
I was just reminded a couple years ago, I was at the Comedy Connection in Rhode Island, I think.
Party.
And so the audience is, you're on stage and it's like a square, so there's a to the left of you is a line of people, in front of you is a line of people.
Okay.
So to the very left is a guy, a white guy with black hair.
Yep.
And he's looking up at me, so he's right up front, and he's just licking his lip, like he's trying to do, like, make out or something. Just like
hilarious.
That kind of stuff. And he's sitting with his pregnant girlfriend. Okay.
Ew.
She doesn't notice or thinks it's cute or something.
Thinks he's being hilarious.
So this is happening, and it's distracting, but it's not enough to call somebody out on it.
I love what the fuck has to happen for you to call somebody out.
Because I have a whole room.
Right. You got to run.
Of people from Rhode Island who are almost retarded. So I can't take time from these animals out here to deal with this animal up
world,
front.
You know, Rhode Island.
So I kind of did a little back and forth with him, and he just wouldn't stop doing that, and it was such a weird thing too. It wasn't like he was verbally saying anything where you could slam
and nobody else could see it.
It was just it was just kind of unnerving.
It's the worst.
And every time I would, it took me out of the moment constantly. So whatever show they got was me autopilot saying jokes to make this show end.
Yeah, yeah.
So the show ends, and I tell the, you know, I'm like, oh, that guy was just awful, and they're like, okay, well, we'll seat him further back for the second show. And I go, what? Well, he's staying. He liked you. So he stayed for the second show. But they put him in the dark so I couldn't see him. And then he was a dick, allowed, like a regular asshole dick.
Just yelling crap.
Yes. And then he could be dealt with and was kicked out.
Holy.
Yeah.
That is a great, horrible Dackler story.
Yeah.
That's a damn nightmare. How flattering was it that he liked your show so much?
First of all, here's why I said he had black hair. Because on closer inspection, it wasn't hair. It was tattoo of blackness all over his head. Like,
his
head
was tattooed black?
His head, his bald head black.
So white, super white
guy. Yes.
Blackhead.
And then that's when I remember he got more and more scary when I realized, I'm like, that's a fucking tattoo, his head.
Oh my God.
And So then I probably acted more conservatively.
Why do I think that you've been holding out on me and you have like 17 stories that are
just
like these?
I don't remember them.
Right.
Until
please, as we go along,
as we go
Lori
along,
Martin,
and get
please
involved.
Let me know. Oh, do you hear the blessed silence?
But I was glad that I didn't have a high voice that night.
Oh yeah.
I'm glad for my low tones.
Low tones. Wrap it up.
Like, do you want to have to develop a voice so that you can, you know,
shut people down?
Shut people down? Is that, you know, I mean, That's the debate. Like, is that important enough for you, or you know, are you do you want to be have that roughness to you,
yeah,
or do you want to stay sort of precious a little bit? You know, I think that's something some comics have to think about, because I think if they're only working like rooms full of respectful audiences, that they're gonna.
You can be softer.
Bad? You can grow that way, and you can continue to have that kind of career. Maybe that's not bad at all.
It isn't bad, but I'll tell you. See, because I have that problem where if I get to stay in Los Angeles, I soften a bit, and the writing is just it changes. And if I'm on the road a lot,
totally.
If I'm on the road a lot, I get a lot tougher.
Yes,
a little more aggro.
Yeah,
and I'm more than willing to tell people to shut the fuck up. And it isn't. I don't. There's part of me that is, well, is proud of that aggro, that, you know, tough
that
comic.
You're glad you have it in you.
Yeah, there's part of me that's proud of it, but I don't like that person. I kind of like the nice person that I can be if I'm in Los Angeles, where there's an audience that wants to hear whatever weirdo premise I'm coming up with.
Yeah, and where you're safe to go be in the moment and not have to worry about that fucking table back there and this bachelorette party and all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about New York is, like, every time I'm there, I have to remember this lesson of the audience really wants to be entertained. Yeah. Like, I feel like here as a comic, you know, if I have one spot that night, which is kind of what you do, maybe if you're...
Because you're driving around.
Yeah. I'm not going to waste it talking to the crowd. I'm not going to, you know, I'm here to work out jokes.
Yeah.
You know, and in New York, they're not here... They're not there for you to work out your fucking little jokes. They want a good show.
Oh, they want you to go to the vault?
Yeah. No, not necessarily vault, but they want, like, I just forgot, like, I got to have more of a personality a little bit more in New York, especially when
they want
in
the personality
beginning.
Bigger.
They want a personality up front.
They want to know that
and
they're seeing a show.
And then you can shove your jokes in. Yeah.
And but then you could even do new material then? Or do you
think? Sure. Whatever you want. But it's I always go, I got to do these 23 jokes in this 12-minute set, and I forget, like, this is in L.A. I could do 3 jokes in this 12-minute set. I just have to make sure I entertain this audience right in front of me.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Is you think that you sort of, like, when you get on stage in New York, you have to take the stage a little stronger.
Differently, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can do whatever material you want.
Yes.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And in L.A., you could just get up and noodle around a little bit, and people are cool with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like you can get up and immediately, after a high, just start telling a joke. And people go with you on the awkwardness of it. Like, they know everyone's
they're like,
on
they're
board.
In show business.
Like,
I get it.
We're all comics.
We're all trying to do... I'm interested in doing stand-up. What does it look like?
They know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
In New York...
They're usually more civilians.
They're not indulgent. They don't care what you're doing. They paid... $35 to get in. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they took a train, or they're here from Switzerland or whatever. And they want
to
fucking
clubs
show.
In New York. I usually do the Ulti rooms in New York, in Brooklyn, and in the Village.
Yeah.
So, though I do love this, the Stand, right?
That's what's called. Cool.
The Stand. I got to do it a bunch last winter,
it's
and
great.
I'm just jealous as all hell. That I miss it, because it's a really great room and
great
that
room.
Audience is really nice, and the staff was incredible.
The staff was great. Yeah,
it was
they're
really
amazing.
Cool.
And they also have this when you walk up, when you go to the stage, there's a teeny dip, like there's a little
there's like a divot or something in the floor.
Yeah, so
because it's from the 1800s.
From the floor. It's just a way that they paved it, I guess. So it's a little divot before you get up on the stage. It's not.
Weird.
It's just kind of around the stage, but. So I always trip once. And I, you know.
Because you have to remember that it's there?
Yeah,
or you're not doing it for effect.
No. But I'm a klutz normally.
Okay.
And then I have, you know, I have my my vanity contact lenses where neither of them gives me enough vision. but I don't have to wear reading glasses in front of people.
Yeah.
Okay. So my middle vision isn't great. And so I do...
I've tripped several times.
So I've tripped, and one time I fell really hard, but I get back up, right? I do a lot of yoga, man. I can fucking get up.
Yep.
And, but
it's recovery.
The last time I fell, last time I kind of tripped on the way up, Monroe, I think his last name is Martin, I think, but he's very funny, but he's like, "Are you okay?" And I realized, oh, I must look like a grandma now. It's like a grandma tripping, because 10 years ago, no one gave a shit. I fell when I was pregnant. No one fucking cared. And now I'm just I'm tripping a little on the way to the stage, and it's like, oh, we don't want to lose you. Like,
you're
alive.
A national treasure, Lori Kilmartin, a national treasure. Yeah, I don't, you know, that whole thing about picking material, you know, I mentioned the vault. It's when I did the South Milwaukee gig, I went so deep into the vault. Almost did it. I forgot to do this. I was asked by a couple of people. They're like, oh, did you remember to do the snowmobile from 1997? I'm like, no. Did you remember to do the biking and bowling bit from 1990? No, because those are too deep in the past.
Yeah.
And I wasn't willing to listen to my first album.
Oh, God.
Just so that I could go and have material for the old people.
Feeling than having to listen to it. Your CD to remember material.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to forget it for a reason.
Right. Just keep writing. Keep writing. Can I just screw around and keep writing? But it was, and I was scared. I was scared to do stuff like the new stuff about my dad because everyone knew him. And I was scared to do this stuff. I was a little scared to do the political stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's Wisconsin. And, everybody in my small town is freaked out because one of the Catholic churches is turning into a mosque. And
interesting.
There were six Catholic churches when I was a kid, and now there's two. Mm. And so the assembly is fine. The first thing I ask the kids is, how many of you guys thinking of moving out when you graduate? And 90% of them raise their hands.
Wow.
And I'm like, do it. Get out. There's no reason to stay and be fucking George Bailey. And a joke no one got.
I got it.
Sure, you got
it's
it.
It's a wonderful life.
But the 400 kids didn't. And that was fine. But then I said, how many of you guys thinking about joining the service to get out of town? And like 10 kids raised their hands. And I said, well, let me tell you what. My dad did that. My dad joined the Navy, was in the Marines for 6 years. He did that to get out of town. And this is what he told my brothers, which is, you can just move. And he's like, you want to be of service to somebody, that's fine. But if you want just out of town, you can get a job shoveling sand anywhere in the world for $2.50 an hour. You don't need to join the Army or whatever. And the teachers kind of tensed up a little bit
You just made our country weaker with your advice to
soldiers. I support the troops finding other work. That's an old joke. Anyway, but hilariously, comedically, there was a Q&A, right? I did what I could to keep them entertained. It was about 45 minutes. And the Q&A was entirely, do you know Tosh? Do you know Jesselnick? Do you know Fluffy? Do you know
Fluffy? Really?
Yeah. Do you know Ron White? I was like, Ron White.
That's nice.
Why do they know Ron White?
He's all over Comedy Central.
Well, Jim Gaffigan, and Kevin Hart. And
any female comics?
I had to mention Amy Schumer and Sarah Silverman.
Whoa.
And, I was like, because I just wanted no women. Yeah.
Judas.
They didn't. Right. They didn't. Nikki Glaser. Nothing.
Wow.
There was. And I was like, well, they're on Comedy Central. But it was great. But then in so we're wrapping it up. And in the back of there's two guys who are sitting in the way back. Mm-hmm. And they kind of remind me of me. And one of them goes, I was like, I got two more questions. I got to go. Y'all got to go to class. And one of the kids, he goes, who are you voting for? And I was like, whoever's on the Democratic ticket, because everyone else is batshit crazy. And the teachers froze. And the kids were like, ooh, you said batshit. And I was like, yeah, I swore in front of 16-year-olds who get the internet. It's going to be fine. And I was like, because the internet was just invented. And then the kid next to him asked what I thought of Trump. And so I did my Trump joke, and then I wrote a new Trump joke right in that moment because I was twitchy about the whole political thing.
Uh-huh.
And then that ended, and it was good. And then the second – but the old people, because they were like – they were literally in – and the woman who booked me, I went to high school with Rachel, she was like, hey, the crowd was a lot younger than it's been in forever. And I was like, you know that my aunt was there who's 87 and my Uncle John, he's 92.
Oh, my God. And, you come from long-living people. That's nice.
Yeah, we're going to stick it out. Can't you wait? You can't wait. Mm-hmm. Mom's going to stick it out.
Oh.
but the weirdest thing is that I did all these jokes from I tried to go back in time and just do all these jokes that wouldn't offend anyone. But I did open with the mosque joke where I just told him to stop panicking about the damn mosque.
Yeah.
And it was just going to be lapsed Muslims 30 years from now. It was lapsed Catholics now. So it doesn't matter, right? And I don't know. Have you ever gone to your high school and done any of that?
No, I haven't gone to my high school and done any of that. But I was thinking, you're reminding me that I, this has nothing to do with what you said, except for that. I
feel free to change the subject.
When I was, I don't know if this is true. I've just noticed this, like when I walk while I'm listening to a set, I seem to get more ideas than if I'm just driving and listening to a set.
Oh, interesting.
Now, let me, this is just a thought, and I have no scientific evidence to back it up. But there is something called EMDR. Have you heard of EMDR?
I got EMDR done, man. Tap, tap, tap.
Let me explain. They don't know your taps.
He doesn't, and Kyle doesn't
know what it is. So if you've been through a traumatic experience, sexual assault or war, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
They do this thing where they'll talk about it with you, and they'll have you talk about it, but they... my therapist, that kind of moves his fingers in a window washer or a windshield wiper direction, and your eyes follow the finger while you're talking about it, and something about the rapid eye movement while you're discussing it takes the shame away from the event and helps people recover.
Oh, interesting.
Much more than talk therapy. So, right. And I did it through some stuff with my swim coach, and it kind of made it over.
Okay.
Know? Yeah, that and Paul Gilmartin's podcast.
Mental podcast.
Mental pod. If you can do mental pod, that's 90% of your recovery. It's a great podcast. But
it is.
But I was wondering, you know, the woman who thought of this, who just thought of this idea, was apparently walking while she's thinking about something, and she was a therapist. So this is already on her mind, but she's thinking about something that happened to her, and she was doing that naturally with her eyes because of what she was looking at. This story is all mushy in my head, but that's how she thought of it. And I was wondering if when you're walking and you're moving your body, that's a way for... while you're listening to a set, is that a way for your brain to process it differently and come up with different ideas?
I'm going to try it now just because I just listened to my set from last night while I was driving today, and I got a lot out of it. But I think, I bet you, because I, you know, I'd like to walk with my notebook then and listen to it, because if I'm going to come up with, you know, sort of tangential stuff, and because otherwise I have to do a bit, you know, 40 times or 12 times or whatever.
Right.
Undetermined amount of times.
When I was, last time I was in New York, I was like, I'd get on the train and I'd listen to a set on the train, and then I'd walk, you know, like I'd get off at 8th Avenue and walk to 3rd, which is a nice walk. It's like a 20-minute walk to get to the stand. But I was listening to a set during that time. And then, I don't know, I just started having a lot more ideas than I normally do. And listening to a set isn't an automatic thing for me. It's very painful.
Yeah.
Kyle's leaving. We're just alone talking.
Oh, fair enough.
Now.
Right. Kyle's like, it's late, you guys. It's super late. But we wanna do the pod. We wanna make sure you guys get the podcast.
So I think
it's an excellent test.
If that's a thing where if your body's doing something it doesn't normally do while you're performing, which is walking, that you
at least like running lines or running bits,
because usually you're just sitting with your notebook right before you go up on stage.
And when you're listening to your set, you might be in your car, or some people
are sitting.
Who exercise. Sometimes
people exercise to their sets.
Who are these people?
Now that is a fucking insane.
Right, listen to your set while you're on the treadmill or something.
No. I have to.
I don't know anybody who does it.
I'm a figure skater when I'm on the treadmill.
Oh, interesting.
Yes,
I have a
whole backstory. This pretend self I pretend to be because I can't bear being
on the
treadmill. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's so stupid.
Is it like the ice capades, or is it more like that?
No, I'm like I'm this tough.
It's awesome. Do it.
I'm the child of Irish terrorists. I can't. I'm going to ruin it if I tell it to you. But but it puts me in this mood where I can do stuff.
Okay.
On a treadmill.
Yeah.
But it's the only time I pretend I'm somebody else is when I'm running.
I say,
or jogging.
I'm a huge fan of playing imagination. Just to get out of it.
Is that LARPing? Am I LARPing?
You are not LARPing, but you could LARP. This is a sign that you could have LARPing in you. And I just want you to know. The weird thing about my psych, when I went to my shrink, this is many years ago, we did EDM, and she did that thing with the windshield wiper,
right,
with the finger moving
EMDR.
And then I was also tapping my face.
Okay,
Like, follow the finger and then tap your face and then talk about horrible things that happened to
you. Yeah, it was something you had to do.
Supposed to let
fingers.
It all go.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Did you feel like it did? Did
yeah,
it work?
She was one of the greatest. She helped me out a lot. And she was also like, have you ever thought about stop drinking? And I was like, no, I didn't think that was my problem. She's like, you don't think that's your problem? Okay. And and then we let it go. And then I got the second DUI. So I was like, oh, that might be an issue. So and then we left it at that. But and then I was in her. I think we're close to the end here.
Are we
what do you guys think?
Yeah, you're in an hour.
We're in an hour?
Right
an hour. Do you want to wrap? Okay.
All right.
Say
so
thanks.
Thank you. I'm Lori Kilmartin.
I'm Jackie Cation. Thanks for listening to the show, you guys. We're gonna
If you
we'll
have
be back.
A shameful experience, get EMDR. It'll really help out. Okay.
And have good sets.
Yeah.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.